everybody out there in podcast land. How's everybody doing? I can't hear you. I don't know. I don't know how you're doing. I'm assuming it's good. I'm hoping it's good. I am doing well as well. I didn't release a podcast last week. I am sorry. I was lazy and I didn't get one together. And then I had to drive to Invermere, which was an 8-hour drive, which turned into a 13-hour drive because of being stranded in a place for a little bit because I was waiting for an Interact transfer that was, and it, the whole Interact transfer system was down. So I got stuck in Merritt, British Columbia for like 2 hours. Never get stuck in Merritt, British Columbia. There's nothing to do there except for drive around the small town. And like, they have this big country music festival every year. So they have like all these countries, famous country singer murals all over the place, like Brooks and Dunn and Reba McEntire and like Toby Keith. It was pretty interesting, but did that drive. Took Eugene on the road with me. If you don't know who Eugene is, you're crazy because I talk about him all the time. He's my new dog that I fucking love. He's changed my life for the better. I love him so much. He was great on the road. He did not like the drive, most of it. I mean, he tried to sit on my lap the whole time, but I bought this special seat belt so that he had to sit where in his seat the whole time. And we stopped and we went for walks and then we got to have a hotel room together. You guys, it was so much fun. I am such a dork now. Like, I am the biggest loser and I'm so happy about it. There comes a time where everyone has to kind of like maybe settle down a little bit. I'm not settling down. Like, I'm still going to be fun, but I'm having a nice time with the boy moving in, and we're creating a house. We bought couches. We bought a desk. He's building me an office. I'm really excited. It's been exciting. It's cool to be happy. It's a weird feeling. And I know I talk about it a lot, but you guys, if you've listened for a long time, you know I've had my ups and downs, but things are finally up again. So that's very exciting. If you missed my podcast last week because I didn't have one, please tell me you listened to the one that I did with the Hunks, comedy group. I had so much fun on that podcast. It was like the weirdest, like, and I wasn't even baked or anything. We just kept on going on this weird tangents. It was really, really fun. So check that podcast out if you didn't. This week on the podcast, I'm really excited. So I did a show on International Women's Day with a group called The Lady Show. And I never got to see that show because they always had performances on the weekends and stuff. And I could never make it to go see it. But I finally, this was on a Wednesday on International Women's Day, and I got to do the show. And it was so much fun. And it's run by a bunch of girls here in Vancouver, Morgan Brayton, Katie Ellen Humphreys, Fatima Dore, and the guest this week on the podcast, Diana Bang. Diana Bang, you would know her from The Interview. That's right. The Interview with Seth Rogen and James Franco. She played Seth's girlfriend, I believe. That's what it is. I don't know. I'm being an idiot, but she's such a funny, sweet, awesome person. She did this performance at the Lady Show that was just like one of the craziest, funniest things I've ever watched. And she's just so much fun. And I really was excited when she said yes to sitting down and talking to me, because it's always interesting to talk to an actor to find out, like, you know, what it's like. You know, everybody thinks that if you're an actor, that your life is easy and you're rich. And the same thing some people think that as a comedian, your life is easy and that you're rich. And most often, no, that is not the case unless you're in this super echelon. But there are hundreds of comedians and hundreds of actors that are just like barely getting by and constantly working. So it's this weird thing, like, you are living your dream. You're doing what a lot of people wish they could do, but it's when you're actually doing it and you're just getting by, it's like this weird thing. So there's a lot of similarities between comedy and acting. So it was really cool to sit down with her and just talk. And she's such a fun, sweet person. So I really liked this episode and I hope you guys enjoy it. If you want to come and see me live, I'll be at Abbotsford Yuck Yucks this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I just did Laugh Lines in New West with a very, very funny friend of mine, Celeste Lampa. I got her to host for me. She came all the way from Edmonton. She stayed with me. It was awesome. It feels so good to be able to help out comics. Like, the comics helped me out. It feels really great. And if you're a good comic, you do. You want to help comics that you see that have potential that are coming up and need your help, because that's the biggest thing. To get to open for somebody. Laugh Lines loved her, and they're definitely going to book her again. I'm really excited. It made me happy. It made me feel really good. And we had a really fun weekend. It was a blast having her stay here, even though Eugene pissed all over the bed that she was sleeping in and embarrassed me. Really embarrassed me. But we cleaned it up. It was all sorted out. Anyway, I'll be at Abbotsford Yuck Yucks this weekend. The weekend after that, I guess that'd be April Fool's weekend, I'm going to be hosting for Jason Rouse at the Yuck Yucks in Vancouver. Then after that, I head to Winnipeg to do the Winnipeg Comedy Festival. Very excited. I am on the Hot Mess Gala. Weird, right? Hot Mess Gala. It's the last gala taping on Saturday night. So I think that's the 8th. So if you are in Winnipeg and you want to come see me tape my television spot, then you can come to that Hot Mess Gala. After that, I go to Prince Albert on Wednesday, April. What day? Wednesday, April. I'm sure you're just fast-forwarding through this to get to but maybe some people want to know. Wednesday, April. No, Tuesday, April 11th, I'll be in Prince Albert. Wednesday, April 12th, I'll be in Saskatoon at the Capitol Music Club. Then I go to Edmonton, do the comic strip for the weekend of from 19th to the 23rd. Calgary at the Laugh Shop from the 27th, hosting a Laugh Shop for 27th, 28th. No, just 28th and 29th. I don't know. You guys, look on the website. But lots of fun stuff is coming up. Oh my God, and this is the most exciting one. If you are in Vancouver, my birthday is April 5th. You can send gifts and cards to Yuck Yucks Vancouver. but no, don't do that. Just if you are in Vancouver, I am so, 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 so excited to bring past guests to this podcast. And one of the funniest people I've ever met, Ron Lynch, is coming to Vancouver for one night only at the Fox Cabaret on my birthday. And I'm so excited. He's coming early. We're going to hang out. He's going to stay with me. I love Ron Lynch. I think he is so brilliantly funny and just like amazing. So April 5th, if you live in Vancouver, it's also brought to you by Paul Anthony from Talent Time, who is incredible. So come to that show. It's going to be amazing. Wednesday, April 5th, the Fox Cabaret. You can get tickets now. Just contact the Fox. I believe there's an Eventbrite. Just look up Ron Lynch, Vancouver. You'll find it. I'm so excited. I'm so, so, so. That show is going to be amazing. Aaron Reed is going to be on the show. Hilarious, hilarious comedian in Vancouver. Graham Clark's going to be on the show. Paul Anthony, I'm going to be on the show. Ron, it's like, and it's my birthday. Oh my God, you guys. It's going to be the best day ever. Anyway, I love you all. Thank you for always listening. Make sure you go and rate and give us a good review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to it. Share my podcast with your friends. Follow me on social media, Kathleen_McGee on Twitter and Instagram. Like me on Facebook, Comedian McGee. I love you guys. Thank you for always listening. And we'll talk to you again next week. Enjoy this episode with the amazing Diana Bang. Yeah, I did. I bought all of this equipment.
Okay.
I bought it on a Boxing Day sale.
Where?
In Edmonton at Long and McQuaid.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And like these recorders are, they go anywhere from like 250 to 607, depending on what you. And so I got this one for like $275, which is a really good deal. And then I just had it for a year, and I didn't use it for anything.
Were you supposed to use? Like, were you gonna use it for podcast?
Yeah, I was gonna do a podcast, but like. With me, I always like, yeah, I'm going to do that. It's like my album. I'm going to release my album. And it's been sitting there for a year. And Everybody's like, where's your album? So I just need a couple kicks in the pants, and I've been getting a lot of kicks in my pants from friends and like people. They know who they are.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
People will send me daily messages. Have you listened to your album? Have you been doing this? Because they know I'm like a, I don't know if it's a procrastinator or just a, I don't really want to release an album because I'm just.
Why?
I don't know. Like, can you watch yourself on film?
After a long while.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would probably shelve it too. I'd be like, oh, look at it like a year or two from now. I can look at it though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, you're like, I mean, I'm proud of myself for doing it and stuff. But then I'm also like, okay, I just don't want to even hear it.
Yeah.
Like, I listened, we recorded 5 shows, and then I listened to all of them now, and I only kind of liked one of them. But that's just me being a fucking idiot.
So you just have to, you have to watch them, choose one, and then release it?
Yeah. So I recorded with Dan Schlissel and Stand Up Records, and like, he's probably sick of waiting for me.
Like, that's 1 year.
Yeah, he's not. I'm sure he's not happy with me right now, but he understands that I'm a crook. Like, we did one recording before that even, and it just, the, it didn't work out. Like, it didn't, I just didn't like any of the recording. I'm an idiot.
Will you get sick of, do you know what I mean? If too much time passes, will you get sick of?
I've listened to the set, and I'm like, God, there are jokes on there that I haven't been telling this year at all. So I'm just like, I need to get it out there and just release it so I can let them go.
Yeah.
It's a weird, I don't know. It's a really weird thing, but
I can imagine. It's like a piece of you in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, how people watch themselves on film or listen to themselves. It's just, are you overly critical of yourself when you watch it? Or is that just the comedian in me that's...
No, I think initially I was super critical. I think if I had fun, then I'll watch it and I'll be like, oh yeah, that was crappy or that was great or whatever. I don't know. I'm able to take a step back because I think I know that it's not gonna be like super great. Like, that's, I know that already. So
what do you mean? Like, what if you, like, you don't think that, like... Like, what if you get a project and you're just like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. You never get that feeling.
Yeah. And then I'm like, I don't want to watch it. So if I lower my expectations, then I can watch it. Like, if I lower my expectations, usually I'm like, I don't know. I just, a lot of it's out of your hands too, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, there's editing, there's like, sometimes like there's like screw ups with the camera. There's like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
So kind of, I just kind of, I don't know.
What was your first, what was your first experience on film? Like, was it television? Was it movie?
It was for a TV show called like Aliens in America.
Nice.
It was like one line.
Was it filmed here?
Yeah.
I think I knew, was it picked up or was it not picked up?
I don't know. It was like a series.
Yeah. Cause I think, do you know Toby Hargrave?
His name sounds
familiar. He's an actor here in Vancouver, and he's also a comedian. I think he did something on that. But so what was it about, Aliens?
In America? I think, I don't really remember. I had one line.
Yeah.
And I think there was, like, a guy living with a family, and I don't know where he was from. Like, he was from, oh, no, I don't want to say because I don't really know. Anyways, it was sort of like a fish out of water type of thing with the student. And then for me, I don't remember what my line was, but I was like eating fries and I had like, it was like a couple of words.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was my first.
Were you like so excited to do that?
I was more freaked out.
Yeah.
I think because like, I was just like, do I eat the fry and then say the line? Do I say the line and then eat the fry? How many fries can I eat? And like, I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was part of a sketch comedy group called The Salted Fish.
Okay.
And we had a gig in Seattle that same day. And so initially I said no to the part because I was
doing a gig already.
Doing a gig. And then, but then like my agent kind of got mad at me. Or he didn't really get mad, but he was sort of like, oh, like this is your first thing.
Chance.
And
yeah.
You say no?
Yeah.
And so they worked it out that I would like do the scene first or whatever and then I'd like bolt it. So yeah. I was a little bit kind of looking at the clock the whole time and sort of nervous about a lot of different things. And then like I don't drive a lot and I think I was just driving down to Seattle too. So I was like, there's just a lot of things. I was like, oh, I got to leave. Yeah. It was just a little bit crazy. But yeah, no, I had fun because it was like I was there for like an hour or two. And then I was like, oh, yeah. So
have you always wanted to be an actress? Or is it just kind of because you started in sketch comedy?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you do any like theater training or you weren't like a theater kid or anything?
No, I mean, I auditioned. Yeah. And so like I was so stupid because in university, I auditioned for the theater program, but I memorized my Shakespeare speech like the night before.
Oh my God.
I put on an English accent and I can't do accents. And then I memorized, and then you had to do two pieces, one contemporary and then one classic. So I picked like Romeo and Juliet because I was like, oh, I read it in grade 10.
Yeah, I can remember this.
And then I memorized like something else. I don't remember. Like it was like a play based on Freud, and I memorized that the night before, and I went. I don't know. I think it's like naivete, and like I don't know. I was just really stupid, and I obviously had no respect for the theater. So.
Well, I think that like a lot of people think that, and I think it's like people will watch good comedy and be like, "Oh, that's so easy. Anybody can do it," or like acting can't be that hard. But it's like hard when. There's all these cameras in your face and you have to do the same thing over and over and over. And I didn't know how movies were made until I worked, at this park in Edmonton, and, it's like a historical theme park, and they used to film a lot. So I used to just sit on set as part of the park to watch to make sure they didn't burn the place down. And I watched them film, like, it was the movie that I worked on the most was Gingersnaps 3.
Oh.
Which was really fun to watch because it was a horror movie and there were werewolves and they had these, like, they had that, he's really famous from LA. He did the makeup and he did the special effects and stuff. And it was really cool to watch, but God, is it boring and tedious to be on a film set.
It's so boring.
Like, everybody's like, oh, that's going to be so amazing. And like, it's cool that you can go to craft services and get whatever you want, but
that's the best part. That's the best part. I had a friend and we would like, I think it was like our first role together as like a guest star role, which means like you're kind of there for like that whole episode. And, almost every day we brought baggies and we're like, oh, are you going to throw any of that stuff away? Like they were throwing away plates of cheese. And so we took it home.
Yeah. I know. I used to date a man in Toronto and he used to do a lot of extra work.
Yeah.
And every single time he would come home with plates with tinfoil. I'm like, are you allowed to take that stuff? And he goes, I just ask. And I'm like, I'm sure they're like, sure, go ahead, take it.
They're like, and like shaking their head.
it is like, it's cool. Like the first thing I ever filmed was for National Film Board, and it was some after school special about sexual harassment in junior highs. And I remember I got that part in grade 9, and I was just, it was weird because they went through all these junior highs drama classes and asked for auditions. And I had so much fun doing it, but like I literally was like, this is so boring. Like,
yeah.
Because you have to sit and then they have to change. Like, people just don't realize how much work goes into a movie.
Yeah, like 1 minute of screen, like, time. It's like, I don't know, a couple days of shooting.
Yeah. And it's like, you'll watch a movie that's horrible and you'll be like, people really invested all this time and effort into this.
I know. Like, I know.
Like, there's too much money out there in the world just to make shit.
I know. I think of like, what was it? Someone was telling me they turned this like studio into this huge train station and they only used it for like a couple of days and then they like wrecked the whole thing. And then I don't know. It's just so much money, work, time, effort. I mean, I don't know. Film lasts forever. So
yeah, I don't know I don't know if we need movies. I think we do. We need that kind of thing. We need entertainment. But it's when you sit back and look at it, it's also silly.
I know.
Like,
it is silly, the amount of money.
Yeah.
Like, what else could I do with that money?
Yeah, exactly. What else could we do with all of this money? But like, I don't know. It's fun. Have you ever done anything that you were like really embarrassed to say that you did? Like, but just did you get a part and it was just like, this movie's terrible, but I'm doing it for the money or something like that?
Honestly, like, I I think for me, I don't think I've been in the position where I can just
turn things down.
Yeah. Or... like, I mean, I do turn things down now, but before I was like, I'll take anything, like anything for experience. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they're probably embarrassing. Like if I saw some of the stuff, I'd be like, oh, no, no. But I don't know. At the time, I was just like, I don't care. I'll do it. I don't care. I'll do it.
It's...
give me.
It's the same thing with comedy is like when you start, they're like, will you go to Fort McMurray for $50? Yes, of course. Yeah. You're paying me $50?
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Wow. Yeah.
So I think it's just like you just get so excited to take anything. But then it's cool to get to a part, to a point where you can turn down work.
Yeah.
That you don't want to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to get to that point, but it's also like for me, I'm in a weird period because I can't. I shouldn't be taking like one-liner roles just because I'm trying to build a particular kind of career. Mm-hmm. And, but also like the bigger roles, like I'm just not getting them.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like, oh, broke, like actor, just like saying no to things where like when I should be saying yes to things. But, I guess that's why I'm trying to do more like, I think I'm trying to do more of the sketch comedy and try to get into that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I never have seen you do anything until the show with the Lady Show and your forehead song. And I just about died. It was so funny.
Aww,
you're really good at being like a nut.
Yeah. I know. I think that's my thing. I'm like, oh, that's like my brand or my like whatever. Like just go crazy and just like start yelling and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think like in this industry, like if you filmed that and put that out there somewhere, somebody would see that. And, you know, like it's sort of like. You would probably get typecast into like the crazy girl role, but like, do you have a type? Do you think that you go out for things and?
I don't know, Asian person. I've auditioned for so many.
What
techies.
Is your background?
Korean.
You're full Korean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's always like techie or it's. Either like, oh, the person who looks super sweet but is actually crazy.
Yeah.
Or just like the obnoxious person. I don't know. It's kind of, it's all over the place. But yeah, I've auditioned for a lot of techies this year, I feel like, which I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if I ever audition, I always get like the chunky best friend sort of thing. Like it's just, it is crazy how like. They'll just put you in this box. And the only way you can really get out of it, I think, is if you, like a lot of people will write their own thing.
Yeah.
The part that they really want to play.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. But I also think that, do you feel how Hollywood is getting more diverse? Is that just me seeing like.
I think it is. Yeah. I mean, I'm not getting hired for a lot of things. But like, I do think there's obviously more awareness. And I do see people getting hired. But. I don't know. I'm still skeptical. I don't know. I just.
Yeah.
It's, I think still at the upper echelons, like
it's all white.
Yeah.
It's still. All white.
It's always, I still go for like, you know, like the side best friend. And I'm like, well, maybe I should be, I feel like I relate more to this lead character.
Yeah.
And,
But nobody can see that. Like Hollywood just won't see that.
Yeah.
They definitely will put you like. And even when you were like, when I think I talked about this a little while ago about like who I watched growing up and who I could relate to.
Yeah.
And like, cause there were like, I was a big girl. So I never saw big girls on TV. Like it was just, and if they were fat, they were like, oh my God, they're like an inch bigger than the other girl. Look how fat she is.
Yeah, totally.
And then like my friend said, well, there was Roseanne. And I'm like, one. Yeah. Out of all of these shows, there was one woman that I really couldn't relate to because she was a housewife. Like, I was a young... I wasn't a housewife when I was 12, right? Yeah. Like,
that's so bad.
But, like, I mean, she was amazing to watch and to think, okay, one day maybe I could be where she is and things like that. And she did kind of pave a way. But I also had a comedy club manager in L.A., say to me, you must be really excited that Melissa McCarthy is getting a lot of roles and stuff. And I'm like, why? She's like, well, she's opening doors for big girls like you. And I'm like, thank you.
Oh my God.
But that's the thing is that's what they act like, right? Like, I'm sure people have said things like, oh, you must be excited that this Asian character actress has got some roles, you know? Yeah, like it just, because I don't remember Asian people on television.
Yeah, there's Margaret Cho.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get that. It. That's yeah, your Roseanne I,
yeah,
bar.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Well, there was Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
And she almost died from starving herself because they told her she was too big.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess she would be your role model. Were you? Are you a fan of Margaret Cho?
Yeah, I mean, I love her political activism and all that stuff. I haven't, to be honest, seen a lot of her comedy. Yeah. I've seen some of it. I love that she's so brash and out there. Yeah, and I actually did like the like this All American Girl. I think that's the show. Yeah, but I think it's because
It was somebody that looked like you on TV.
Yeah, that's
it. Wasn't because it was a good show.
Yeah, and I don't know if I watch it now, I might be like, ooh,
it probably was a terrible show.
Yeah,
but I think like I've heard interviews with her talking about it. She said, yeah, it was awful. It was racist. It was like just because. Here is a Chinese family and or a Korean family, and we're going to show them to the world. This is how they all are.
Yeah.
Which is just weird. And like, it's like things like even the Cosby show was sort of like, I don't know if they like tried to make them look like a white family. You know what I mean?
I know what I mean.
And I don't mean it like that a black family couldn't get there. And it was cool to see an upper class black family. But I think like part of it is also like, well, every time they had a movie about or a TV show about a black family, they had to become rich, like the Jeffersons,
right?
Or Cosby Show or for the longest time.
Fresh Prince,
Fresh Prince. They had to be a rich black family, which is like, and again, I'm not saying that that's not possible. I'm just saying that like nobody would put like real life on television.
Yeah, yeah,
which was so weird. Maybe we'll get a show one day and put real life on television.
Well, there's The Wire, although I've only seen the first season. Yeah.
And it's really good. But I would love to see a show like Girls with girls that are not all white.
Yeah. No, definitely. I've been, I think we're like around the same age.
Yeah. How old are you?
35.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I've been like, it's just like, I don't relate necessarily to Sex and the City. Like I didn't watch, I watched like a couple episodes.
Yeah.
And like Girls, yeah, because they're like broke and like in New York, but
they're not even broke.
Yeah, no, they're not broke. You're right. They're like faux broke. Yeah.
Their parents, like,
yeah.
Yeah, no.
And then it's like, I'm just like, I need, like, I think Vancouver or the world needs to see like women of our age.
Yeah.
Like, who, I don't know if you're broke, but I...
Oh, I'm broke. Yeah, I'm in the arts. Anyone in the arts is broke.
Exactly.
Anybody in the arts living in Vancouver is broke.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
The brand here is ridiculous, but...
Yeah, and just like, I don't know. I would love to see that, like, in like a diverse cast. And,
yeah.
You know, dealing with issues of, especially a lot of my female friends in the arts who are like my age, all like single or like don't have kids, don't plan on having kids or want to have kids, but can or whatever. And it's just like, just the things that we deal with, like, being in our mid 30s. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Have you seen Broad City?
I've seen a few. I'm so bad with shows, but I've seen, it's so funny.
Really good.
It's so funny.
It's good. They're really young in it, although I think that they're not in their 20s in real life. I don't know how old they really are.
Yeah.
But they talk about being 22 and stuff. But it's a great show because it is really real. Like, it's more real. But then, like, people are like, well, we're sick of these women gross out shows. I'm like, what do you mean women gross out shows? Well, they talk about pooping and, like, because women poop.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's cool. And that's why I loved doing the lady show with you guys.
Yeah.
Which is a...
You were so good. By the way, I love you. I was just like... that was the second time I've seen you.
Yeah, and I hadn't really ever met you before either.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun. And like, I had such a good time on that show because it was like different from what I normally do. Like, I did a dance number.
I know.
It was really fun, but also I'm a horrible dancer. But it was really cool to be like, to be able to do something. And it's so funny when people complain about all women shows.
Right.
And it's just like, can we... then don't come.
Yeah.
Then don't support. But like, and I love it because when they do all female comedy shows, it can get redundant.
Yeah.
Just like if you go to a show and it's all white dudes, it's very redundant.
Yeah, yeah.
But your show is different because it's sketch and it's stand up and it's everything. And it was so much fun.
I don't know, when you were there in the rehearsals for the dance, I was just like, oh, I'm so glad you're here, because you're like, oh, what's, like, what am I doing? And like laughing the whole time. I was like, yes, I love her.
Yeah, it was definitely, because I could never, I never did that dance number perfect once. Like, there is no way. Like, it was just ridiculous. It was terrible. But it was fun. And I've been getting more into doing shows because they're fun.
Yeah.
Because after a while, like, being in a comedy club, I don't even want to watch comedy anymore, because it's just kind of like, I've seen it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of cool to go out of your... Have you ever done stand-up?
No.
Would you ever do stand-up?
I don't know. I used to say no, but I don't know. I think, you know, honestly, if I were sort of... brought up a certain way, I don't know, I think, or encouraged, yeah, like I might have pursued it, I don't know, but I right now I enjoy doing like monologues, like sketch monologues, which is kind of in between,
which you're really good at, because that thing that you did was incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's kind of, I don't know, so that's I like doing that. Mm-hmm. I might explore stand-up, but I don't know, like,
It is, it's a thing, like, I think you either really are drawn to it or you're not. Like, if you're kind of like, oh, I'm not, you probably shouldn't do it, because, right, like, you wouldn't get into it. It's just like me and improv, like, I should never do improv because I'm really not good at it. Like, I'm, yeah, really good at doing things on my own and being myself.
Yeah.
But as far as, it, like, I'm not great at acting, I don't think.
But you were in a sexual harassment video.
I was in the ninth grade, and I was bathroom girl number one. And I sexually harassed another girl because she had big tits. That's basically what my
role. Are you serious? Oh.
Well, I like made fun of her big tits. And I guess that's sexual harassment in junior high schools. But no, like I want to act more. Like, I, yeah, do. I want to get into that kind of thing. But it's also a thing where I want to write it.
Do it, because, you know, on it, like, I'm so, I hate auditions now. I hate, yeah, I kind of am so sick of TV and film acting. I think I'm slowly trying to transition into kind of doing more comedy, or like trying to do my own stuff, because, yeah, there's just no satisfaction in it for me right now.
Yeah.
And unless I get paid, and I'm not booking anything to get paid. So it's kind of like, I'm gonna do something else.
Yeah. Do you have ideas in your head for script? Like, have you ever written a script? Have you ever thought of doing that?
I'm trying to learn, and I'm also trying to learn like playwriting, whatever I can do.
Yeah.
My sister, her and I are trying to write something together.
Nice.
And we kind of want to, just apply for different programs and, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the dream for me now. And I think it's maybe realistic, maybe not. For her and I to like run a show. That would be so cool.
Yeah.
Does
she live here?
Yeah.
She lives here. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's she's on Kim's Convenience.
Oh, that's such a great show.
Yeah. She's the daughter.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
She's great. Like, that's a great show.
Yeah. It's super fun.
Oh, my
and,
God.
Yeah.
Do you guys compete for stuff then?
No. And the thing is, it's like, I told her about that role. I was like, I'm not going to do, I don't want to play 20 or 21. Like, uh-huh. I'm too old.
Is she much younger than you?
No, she's only a few years younger, but she kind of started, doing acting stuff later.
Okay.
So I was like, oh my God, Ender, you gotta audition for this. But also, I don't know. I think we just support each other. It's sort of like, well, if you're doing well, then I'm going to ride on your coattails.
Yeah.
If I'm doing well, you ride on my coattails.
Yeah,
and we'll try
awesome.
To lift each other up and try to do stuff together. So
that's such an amazing attitude to have, because I find, I found that a lot of people had that attitude in Los Angeles when I went down there to live for a little bit, because when I lived in Toronto doing comedy, it's so small in Canada that it's very competitive.
Oh yeah.
So it feels like not always that people want to work with you or help you get better, because they might get better in the future. But what I noticed in LA was that everybody was just so supportive, because you have no idea who, like, when I started, there are guys when I started in LA doing potlucks that are now like major comedians, and you have no idea who is gonna get it. But if you are friends with everybody, that when they get a TV show, there might be like, I really want you to write on the show. Like, cause that's the thing, is like, part of my hope for if I ever become successful is to bring people that I think are completely ignored or underrated.
Yeah.
Up into.
Yeah.
In front of people's faces. Right.
Yeah, like, totally.
And I think that that is like a really good attitude to have instead of a competitive attitude.
Yeah. And I mean, with me and my sister, we're like very similar, but we're also different. Yeah. And I think we each have our own different outlets. You know, I've got some sketch comedy and like, and she's got like, she writes. And so, yeah.
It's cool. You have both have different skill sets and that, and yeah. If you bring them both together.
I know.
Then yeah. I
want magic.
That would be so magic. Could we make a, like, I think we should make, we should make a show where, I'm your sister. Where your family adopted a white baby.
Yeah.
And then I get to grow up in your family and this like giant white girl.
Token white girl.
Token white girl. Yeah, yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be really fun. Was the interview your biggest role so far to date?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah.
How did that all happen?
I just auditioned.
Yeah.
And.
Because they filmed a lot of it here.
Most of it here.
Yeah.
I think they did some reshoots in LA. Mm-hmm. After.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was just straight up auditioning. And at the time,
what was that audition room like? Because who, can you just explain who you played? I'm sure everybody knows. Yeah. Like, because there was, I think you were the only female in that movie. I think.
No, there was Lizzie Kaplan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But okay. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's true.
I think it was like, it was a bit of a whirlwind. So I had a regular audition with the casting director.
And yeah.
So I don't really remember. But
were there a lot of angry Korean girls waiting for? In the room?
No, you know what? So when I auditioned, I don't really remember the audition being very like you didn't, the sides were like more like about being kind of like a girlfriend type.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't so like that militaristic
really?
Thing. Yeah. And I guess they just wanted to see if you could
be soft and
like or have that chemistry or something. Mm-hmm. And that was for the initial audition.
Okay.
The second one I actually auditioned with Seth.
Oh, that's
and
really
like the
fun.
Rest of the like Point Grey Productions.
Yeah.
And then we went through the whole script and I read like every scene off the script. And then I showed like they did direct me a little bit like, oh, she's like more I don't know. Maybe more militaristic here or whatever. And yeah, I mean, honestly, at the time, I was, and this is so cliche, but I was ready to quit acting. And and for real, because mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, I feel really crappy about my situation or whatever. And, you know, I'm just going to take a step back. No, I was ready to, like, I was like a month from that audition or a month from that audition, I was like, I'm telling my agent that, you know, to take me off the roster, I'm going back to school.
Yeah.
Anyways, that audition came up. And then when I went to go audition with like Seth and all those guys, Evan and stuff, I was like, I don't care if I get it or not.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm going to nursing school. Goodbye. Like, so I think that's part. And I think that's why I got it, because like I didn't care. And mm-hmm. so I was able to like have fun and play.
Yeah.
And yeah. But I think it's, I don't know.
Have you found that in your career? Because I find that like if I'll be going through a rough patch and then I'll be broke and I don't understand why am I still doing this? I'm tired of borrowing money from my parents. I'm 35. This is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then I'll get a royalty check or I'll get a gig where I'm getting a lot of money. And it's sort of like, I feel like it's like the world telling me, don't quit. It's just going to be really hard, but don't quit. Cause it just keeps on giving me little things to keep me going.
It's totally like that for me. I'm like existential crisis every day. I'm
yes.
Like, what am I doing with my life? And then, yeah, I'm really at that kind of, this year, so I've done since the interview or since I filmed it, I've been, participating in pilot season.
Oh, you know? Awesome. Yeah. Done. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is my fourth, pilot season. And it's like, I can't catch a break. Like I just don't even get to the final stage. And I'm just like, so I went through this real kind of like low, like hopeless, like why am I doing this? And I felt really crappy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but then I did the lady show and like I did the Shiro show, like, which is like, the next day. And I was just like, this is like, I don't know about continuing necessarily TV film, but like, this is where, like, this is where I feed my soul.
Yeah.
And every time comedy saves me, every time.
It's a, that statement is so real because it's totally true. Like, I've had days where I'm like, this sucks. And then I'll bomb a set and then I won't go out for a couple days. I'm like, this is, what am I doing? I'm not even good. Why am I even trying? And then I'll go out and I'll have an amazing set that just, it's like a gas tank gets filled up again.
Yeah.
Just from like, no, this, I'm good at this. This is fun. It's just always this, there's so much self-doubt in being like, in any kind of performer, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it is such a roller coaster of getting things and then not. Like, I went through 2-3 years of not even getting any festivals, not even the little tiny festivals. And then I got a few festivals. Like, it's just, it's such a, like, it's a, you have to be a very strong person to be any kind of entertainer.
Oh, you have to be resilient, like, beyond, beyond resilient. Yeah.
And it's so soul crushing, but it's also, it's all about mostly luck, I think.
It's mostly luck. So you just have to, like, so it is a game of attrition too, like do you stick it out, like you know, and people start falling by the wayside, but if you keep, like, if you stick it out, you'll get something
will happen.
Yeah,
it will pay off in the end. It might not pay you back everything that you put into it, but at least it will pay off in the end.
Yeah.
Was it, so when you found out about getting the interview, was that like, I remember when I got an audition and I got the part, I lost my mind when they told me that I won. Like, I got really, well, I won. I got the role. Yeah. So it was really exciting. But like, to hear that you got like a role in a Seth Rogen, like, huge movie. Yeah. Did you freak out?
No.
You didn't?
Because I was like, I don't care. And I was like, oh, I got it? Okay.
That's perfect.
And I was like working in an office at the time. I'm like, oh, okay, I got it. And I think part of it is like, you know, tempering some of my emotions. I don't know, thinking back. Like, I guess I didn't really know what it meant.
Yeah. Was it, when you first heard of the movie, did you think, holy shit, this is going to be a big deal?
No.
No, you just thought it was going to be another.
Yeah. And when I initially read the script, I was like, oh, okay. Like, it's a great script.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, yeah, it's just like a girlfriend kind of, you know. Yeah. Or like when I read the sides. But that's only like a small part of the whole movie, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay. And then, but then it's like being on set and like being able to like improvise or like, and they're really receptive to your like ideas.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this is super cool. And yeah, but I don't know. I think the whole time I was just kind of like, okay, we'll see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Like, I think because I really was like done, I was just sort of like, okay, well, I guess this is the universe telling me something.
Yeah.
I'm going to be open to whatever it is. I'll just do my job and then see what happens. Like, I don't know. I think it was also surreal too. Mm-hmm. So I think I wasn't totally
letting it in. Why was it
letting
it in? It was surreal because of who was in it or just like the whole everything?
I think it's because who was in it.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh yeah, Seth Rogen, James Franco, like,
yeah.
I get starstruck by everyone. Yeah. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, if I've seen you on TV or if I've seen you like do something, I'm like, oh.
It is a weird feeling to like just meet somebody that you've seen for years acting and then you get to talk to them and then now you're acting with them. So that must be like crazy.
Yeah. And it's almost better if I haven't seen them because then I can actually interact with these people like real, like they're a real person.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'm like talking to them and I'm like in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking to like whoever it is. And
is Seth Rogen someone fun to work with? Is he good to work with?
Yeah. He's super chill.
Yeah.
And just like, I don't know, just like,
and he's from Vancouver. So it must've been a cool experience to have him filming in Vancouver. Cause he's from here.
Yeah. He films here a lot.
Yeah.
And His like parents live here.
His parents were at the 10th anniversary for Kino. There's like a it's like an open mic on Tuesday nights at the Kino Cafe, and they came to the show. Because I guess Steve Allen, the guy that runs it, he put Seth on stage when he was first starting to do stand up.
Yeah,
out here. So it is cool to, and it's cool that he comes back here and brings money and brings jobs back here, back to Canada.
Yeah. No, it is cool. And I hope they bring more. I mean, there's some good ones, I think, that he's working on right now. Like, I read the script for this pilot, and it's like a sci-fi one. And it's like, their stuff is really
funny,
and it's really cool. And then, I'm excited to see more of it. They're also doing a movie here. They're like taking over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're doing so much stuff. And now do you find it like easier to get auditions now that you've gotten a bigger role?
I have a little bit of notoriety because of it.
Yeah.
But that was years ago. You know what I mean?
How long ago was that?
I don't know. I filmed it in 2013.
How long ago you filmed it?
At the end of 2013. And okay. So it came out in 2015?
I guess so, yeah.
And it's not that long ago, but it is, I don't know. And it's a weird thing that I feel like I did it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it's like the biggest thing I've done.
Yeah.
And people, when they, you know, when promoting a show or anything.
They put that on, yeah.
Always. And I'm just like, cool, but I'm doing other things now too. And it's, I mean, like, how are they supposed to know? Yeah. But it's still like a weird thing that I'm trying to like, trying to navigate and kind of figure out.
Yeah, to be only known like for that, like promoters will.
Yeah, of course.
Do that for sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And, but yeah, so I'm just waiting for that like next big thing. And whether that's something that I book or something that I create myself, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Was it, did you think it was going to be as controversial as it was when it came out? Because everyone made such a big deal about it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think I think it was like the joke on set. Wouldn't it be hilarious if we started World War III? Ha, 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 ha. And that was like, you know, that was the joke. But I didn't think it would actually happen. And like Obama did that speech. He like, I don't know, afterwards, it was just crazy. It was like, yeah, it was crazy, but I felt really removed because I think all that stuff was happening, like all the Sony hacking, all that was like in LA and here I was like, oh, it's just me in Vancouver kind of in this like bubble.
Yeah, but that's cool. I think it made more people go to see it.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really play in the theaters though, so.
Yeah, that was so, like, I still can't believe that. I still can't believe that they wouldn't put it in theaters that people thought that there was going to be bombing. Like, I don't know much about North Korea.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't
think a Hollywood movie would start World War III.
No, it's ridiculous. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think they have a sense of, like, humor or irony or any of it. And so it's kind of like when you say, like, I'm going to assassinate the president, it's like, oh, it's very very like
they would take it seriously.
Would take it seriously.
Have you been to Korea at all, like even South Korea?
I went recently, and I've been before, but and I've been to like the DMZ, which is right by the at the border.
Okay,
but obviously not
to North Korea.
Not North Korea. I know people who've gone, but you like when you go on these like set tours, so they only show you what you want, what they want you to see.
Yeah,
so.
Does that interest you at all? Would you ever go?
I don't know. They might kill me now. So I don't know if I'd go now.
What? Who are you? Oh, I was in that movie about killing.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, that's crazy. Are your parents, are they from Korea or are they Canadian? Like, were they born in Canada?
No, they're immigrants.
So, and you were born here, though?
Yeah.
Right? So what was that like growing up as a Korean kid in Canada?
I mean, it's all I really know.
Yeah.
And I grew up mostly in Burnaby. Okay, and a lot of my friends were like me. They were like Asian Canadian kids. Yeah. So I didn't really feel that different, but there were times, like, for sure in high school, where, like, you'd hear stuff like the Italians would be like, "Oh, I'm not into Asian girls, sorry." Like,
oh, or, darn. Yeah. I can't get your greasy balls on me. What? Oh, yeah. So sad.
Yeah, but that stuff, like, does affect you, you know?
It does, yeah.
Like, people saying, like, even, like, indirectly saying things, like, shitty things or, yeah. But it's, the racism wasn't as, like, overt. Well, it was overt when I was, like, young. And then as I've gotten older, like, it's obviously still there.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit more PC now. People don't.
People are quieter about the racism.
Yeah, they're quiet. It's still there. It's still the same.
Well, it's erupting in the States again because their leader is making it okay.
Yeah.
It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah. If I really think about it, like, and let it in, I don't know if I could, like, I would be crying all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Like, everybody has struggles, but, like, you know, like, I've always been overweight, so I've always had, like, that kind of, like, people. Well, yeah. You know, I had guys in high school like, "I don't fuck fat chicks," right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
But I think that's why people, I don't know, I think that, like, that's why people that are different make a better artist in the end, right? You know what I mean?
Well, we have an outside perspective,
yeah.
You know, like an outsider's perspective, and we can, so we know what it's like to be on the inside and we know what it's like to be on the outside, and we can kind of comment on both. And, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel very fortunate to have, sometimes it, like, growing up, certain things I'm like, "Oh, sucks," you know, like being oppressed in certain ways or whatever, like, yeah, what have you. And, but at the same time, like in comedy, you know, for example, or in the arts, it's like you can bring that perspective and you just have a different point of view. And it's different from, like, straight white males. It's like, you know what I mean? So I feel very fortunate in that way.
I'm finding that there are some of these straight white males that are kind of pushing back because they don't like that everybody is attacking them. And I don't think that I ever attack all of them, but, like, it's sort of like, no, now you understand what it feels like.
Right.
To be, like, judged as soon as you get on a stage, you know?
Right.
Or, like, it's finally everybody is now having to deal with, like, stereotypes and things like that. I think it's cool, but I also think it's, like, not going to change. Everyone's like, "What's changing?" It's not going to change.
No.
Like, everybody keeps saying, "Oh, there's more women getting into comedy." Still not going to change.
Yeah.
It's not going to change. Like, it's not going to be, it's still going to be a male dominated industry.
Well, I listened to one of your podcasts and, like, you started 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And were you the only woman
in Edmonton when I started? There was one other girl that had been doing it for maybe a year and she was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And, she went on the road once and then never came back.
Wow.
And it's not that I don't think it had anything to do with the comics she went with. It's just, like, especially in Alberta, going on the road is not glamorous.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was totally cool to be staying at these motels and, like, "God, I got paid $50 to do comedy today. That's crazy."
Yeah.
But I think, like, I think it's easier now to get into comedy as a woman. But when I started, the girls that had gone ahead of me, like Nikki Payne and like Christine Von Hagen and all these women, they had been on the road before. But it was just like the road will really scare women off, I think.
Why?
Because it's not like nobody likes to stereotype genders, but it's not pretty. You don't get people to carry your things for you. Like, you have to stay in some disgusting places. You have to deal with a lot of drunk people, a lot of drunk men.
Right.
And then my act has always been extremely sexual and stuff. So I've had instances on the road where, like, I get aggressive drunk men that won't leave me alone. And it's, you do build, like, a tough skin and you do build an attitude. Like, I feel like I have a lot of confidence now because I've gone through all of this stuff and I've, but, like, it's not like, and especially in Canada, you're driving for 8 hours to go to a gig to make $50 and then drive home that night or the next day. And so it also depends on the guys that you're around when you first start.
Yeah. Can I have a quick question?
Yeah, ask me
questions too. Do you think if you started comedy like now and you did that tour thing, like, do you think you would stick it out, or is it because you were in your 20s and like stupid?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, it does. It is weird. It is rare that a person starts comedy in their 30s and sticks it out. There are a few really, Lori Gibbs is an amazing example of that. She did my podcast once before. She's a comedian in Calgary, and I don't know how old she was when she started, but she started just a couple of years after I did, but she was a wife and mom, and she started, and it's hard to start comedy, because if you are really serious about it, you dive into it and it's your life for the next 2 years. So what happened to me was I got dumped by this guy, and I was really depressed and sad. And then I just kind of found comedy, and I literally for the next 3 years, I was at a comedy club every weekend, trying to get on stage every night. My friends that were non-comedy, I didn't see them as much anymore. And I think it would be hard if I was like 35, because if I started now, I would have a career doing something else. Right, you know what I mean? And maybe I would have a family. And so it's really hard.
Yeah.
And it's so hard for women. Like, I know there are lots of female comics that have children. And I think, I don't know if it's like this for actors, but it's like, it's not impossible to do it. But it's not like when a male comic has a baby and he's like, there's my baby, I'm going to go on the road.
Yeah.
Like, because I think it would be extremely frowned upon if I brought an infant with me everywhere. Do you know what I mean?
Like into comedy clubs and
stuff? Yeah. Or if I took him on the road with me and then there's like got a babysitter in that town. You know, I think that would be really frowned upon, because people still expect the woman to raise the children, even though it's changing. But like there's a woman named Kate Davis, and she's a mother of, I think she's got three or four kids, and she's an incredible comic, and she started and she did comedy when she was pregnant. Like it's such a different world for women. And also you don't want any special treatment just because you're a woman, although some women do, but I never want to be put on a show because I'm a woman. I want to be put on a show because I'm funny. Like,
I mean, the playing field has to be even. Mm-hmm. So, sometimes it's like, there needs to be a show like where you have, like you have to put women on, or like an all women show. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you got to be funny. Like, you got to be good at what you do. Sorry.
Yeah. Like when I have like other female comics being like, I don't feel like I'm being treated fairly. And I'm like, I think you are. You're just not funny enough yet. And nobody that's doing comedy wants to be told they're not funny. But I was told that when I started.
Yeah.
I was told that I was too dirty, or that, I had to grow some balls if I wanted to tell the jokes that I was telling.
Yeah.
So it's just, and comedy is such a long road. And I'm sure like acting is too, but it does happen that like some actors like audition for a couple things and they,
it's
weird. But I don't think that there's very many comedians out there that, I'm going to get on amateur night in the next 6 months, I'm headlining. I think the only person I've ever heard that started headlining a year in was Norm Macdonald. That's the only person I've ever heard of that happening.
I didn't know that happened to him.
He's fucking hilarious. Oh my God.
I saw him live for the first time like a couple years ago. And I was like, what have I been doing with my life that I've not been watching him like constantly?
He's so funny. He's Canadian too. Like, very, very funny. And but he's also been doing comedy 4 years. Like,
forever.
I think with the YouTube generation, because so many people put a couple things on YouTube and all of a sudden are celebrities, I think that's spilled over into the stand-up world where people think that I even hear comics are like, I've been doing this for 3 years and I'm not getting any breaks. I'm like, I haven't seen you killing.
Right.
You have to kill, especially in Canada. You really have to get good to move up, because it's very competitive in Canada. There's not as much stage time as there is in the States. And then once you get good in Canada, your first thing is you want to leave because the opportunities here are very limited.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was told like when I started acting, cause I was like, why am I not like auditioning a lot and like getting stuff or whatever? And it's almost like you got to think of the first 4 years of whatever you do, like you're going to school. Like if you're going to university, you know, for like anything, you wouldn't, you know, in your second year, you wouldn't be like, oh, I should all of a sudden be like a scientist.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, you got to pay your dues.
It is a big thing, like paying your acting dues. Like I did a lot of extra work
Yeah.
Which is boring as hell, but it can be good money.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it is, it, there's a lot of duping. And I don't have an agent yet. I need to get one. I just want to get a commercial.
Yeah, you should. I don't know what your problem is. Why aren't you, go get one. Release your album. Go get an agent. Come on.
I think that I maybe I'm afraid of being successful. I don't know what it is. I have no idea what it is. Maybe I just love being broke all the time. I don't. Why would I ever want to be able to buy a car?
Oh my God.
It's just but it is sort of, I just hate auditions too. You must hate auditions. Most people don't like them.
I hate them. And I do a lot of tapings because
I hate taped auditions.
Yeah.
I had an old comedy club manager who's now got her own sort of management business in Calgary contact me, and she wanted me to audition for this show that was being shot in Calgary with Christina Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, of course I will. And at the time I had this like WestJet pass, so I could have flown to Calgary for the audition.
Yeah.
For like $40. It was great.
Oh,
but,
my God.
But okay. They said, no, just send in a tape. And I'm like, no, I don't want to tape this. Like, I'm not good on tape. Like, I need to meet you face to face. Like, yeah. I can't. And then they just sent me a script and no direction of who I was. Like, not even a character description other than, like, she's bubbly.
Yeah.
And it was just really, I didn't know what to do. And so I taped it. Fatima taped it for me.
Oh, okay, cool.
But it was terrible. Like, I sent it off and I was like, I'm not confident in this at all. And I feel like if I had the chance to actually meet the people, I usually do well in auditions if I'm physically there and I meet them.
It's because, you know, part of the reason why people book is because, like, of who they are. And I think with comedy, this is what I learned because I did, one pilot season. I stayed in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the year that I probably should have gone to L.A. because it was right after The Interview came out.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm broke. I can't go.
Yeah.
And I sort of learned after that, like, for comedy, you have to be in the room. Like, that you energy, do. Like, dies, like, if you just tape it.
It's the same thing as, like, when people watch comedy on TV and they think that that's what it's like in a club. The best way to see stand-up comedy is live in a small club.
Exactly. Theater, like, any live anything. Performance. It's like, you got to see it live.
It's so important. And, like, I think that that's a big – I don't like taping auditions because I think that that puts you at a real disadvantage against everybody else because nobody – Because I'm a likable person.
Yeah,
That's my thing about... That's how I get away with the shit that I say on stage. It's my likability. And so I need to be able to be there so that I can, like, schmooze and, like, look at me. Like, I can make it an easier thing. So, yeah, I do want to start auditioning more. I'll need to get an agent.
Well, why did you...
But how do you get agents?
For me, I did the old school way of just sending out resumes and headshots.
Yeah.
But, you know, like... if you know people, then they'll be like, oh, I'll hook you up with, like, I mean, I would, but I think my agent reps, like, he reps a lot of improvisers, and I know there's another one who reps a lot of, like, stand-ups.
Oh,
so if you just, like, ask your friends, like, I mean, I can hook you up and whatever, and I don't, that's probably a better way.
Yeah. It would be cool to be able to, because I'm during the day, I'm like definitely thinking about getting a temp job because I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I'm wasting my time and I could be making money.
Yeah.
But I would rather just get a commercial.
I know. That's true.
And continue my life of luxury.
I know.
We were watching a really old Louis C.K. special last night.
Yeah.
And he talks about, and I just moved in with my boyfriend. And he talks about how he just moved in with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she works a real job. And so he's like, and I sit at home all day and watch TV. And I'm like, and my boyfriend looked at me. And I'm like, what? I do laundry once in a while.
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird thing too, is like to have that job. Like, I don't. Have you ever dated somebody? Is your boyfriend in the industry?
He's more in the theater world.
Okay, but he's still an actor and an artist. When you don't, like, I had a boyfriend that was like a warehouse worker, and he used to get frustrated because he'd be like, you get to go away on weekends and have fun and party, and I have to work. But I'm like, but I've worked a really long time to be able to do this. And
but you're also working.
I am working. It is. I just followed my dreams and, like,
yeah, sorry.
That's the thing, is I've been dumped before for, like, that kind of reason. Just like, oh, your life is so much fun and it's not fair. Or I've had guys that were like, you're too ambitious. Like,
Oh,
so it's crazy.
That is crazy. I have, for the most part, I've been with people who've like, who have really good jobs or like yeah. they're doing very well. So I'm like the, yeah, like more the idiot kind of like going off and doing weird things. I think that's
very important in an artist relationship is either you're with another artist and you're both going to be poor and miserable forever, or you find someone that has a passion for something else.
Yeah.
And it's really important. Like my boyfriend right now, he's a chef and he is super passionate, workaholic. And
yeah.
I love that. I love that that's what he, that he loves doing that. Although like, it's like he works all the time, but I think it's good for us. I always dated guys that didn't always have the most ambition, and I'm sure some of them might be listening and I'm sorry, but I didn't mean that as an insult. But it is, it's hard when you have a lot of ambition and you're with somebody that doesn't have that or see. Yeah. They're supportive, but it's like I always needed somebody that was going to be just as ambitious about and passionate about what they do. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and you know, the guy I'm with now, he's younger than me, and so he's definitely...
How much younger? Because my boyfriend's younger than me too.
I'm like, it's a lot younger.
A lot younger?
Yeah.
Like in his 20s younger?
Yeah.
You whore! I love it. You're like Madonna. You're Korean Madonna.
I need to get buff arms now too.
You're Korean J-Lo. Oh my God, so he's in his 20s.
Yeah, and so... He's really ambitious.
Yeah.
And he's all, but he's also like gone really far in his career. And I think me being in my mid 30s, just like, and acting being very up and down and a lot of times down, I sort of can get like lost and like, you know, depressed about things. And
yeah.
Like, but like being with him, like he's like constantly like hustling. And it, that's kind of a nice sort of like,
yeah,
like reminder, like, oh yes, I am passionate about these things. I do like these things. And then it is nice being with an artist who like, and so both of you
you motivate each other.
Totally.
Yeah.
But then we also just like to have, you know, just downtime doing nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, and I find like, I always said I should date a chef because I find that they have the same sort of lifestyle as comedians.
Totally.
And mentality as comedians, although they're way more fucked up than comedians. Way more fucked up.
Do you think
up.
There's more drugs too?
Oh yeah.
Way more drugs.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh my God. It was, yeah. The stories that I've heard. And I went out partying with him and his friends once and I could not keep up. And I can drink.
Yeah.
I'm a very good drinker. But like, I was like, they were just doing beer shop. And Kathleen's like, yeah, I can drink 6 pints and do 6 shots. I cannot. But they, yeah. They're just degenerates like comedians. Most chefs are degenerates. Most good ones are, right?
And just crazy. Like,
and you have to like have, I'm not saying you have to have drugs, but what the hours that they work and like,
I know,
you know, and it, the social aspect of being in that industry, just like in comedy is you'll, I can't speak for chefs. I'll have to have him on the podcast, but like, when you do comedy, so you do a show, your late show is at 10:30. You're done. If you're headlining, you're done around midnight or a little bit longer if you're one of those comics that likes to go on and on. But when you get off at midnight, you're not tired. Your adrenaline, especially if you had a great show, your adrenaline is pumping. And especially if you have a great show, people want to buy you drinks. And, you know, if you want to drink that night, then you go out and you party. And it's just part of the job. And it's really weird because people expect you to be a party animal. It's
really,
well, I used to be a crazy party animal. Like every time I'd go out, I've been slowing down just because I'm getting old.
It's not
that easy to do that anymore. But people are disappointed when you don't want to party and drink with them.
What happens? Do you get ostracized a little bit as like a comedian? You know, because I know comedians who are like, I don't drink anymore because it's just.
I have this like theory that like once someone headlines for long enough, they'll quit drinking. Because it's just like when you're in comedy, like you go to festivals and you get like blackout drunk all the time because it's you're around a bunch of other comedians. And I think that after a while, it just is like it gets to be too much. Like either some people, it becomes a problem and it's detrimental for their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or some people it's detrimental to their health.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you just find yourself in too many dangerous situations because when you're drunk, you do stupid things.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're in a small town and I had that in Cranbrook. I had like two guys like kind of stalk me and like come to my hotel, and they gave them my room number. And they,
oh my God.
It was really like, and that was like when I first started comedy. So that's what I mean. Like if that happens enough as a young girl in comedy, you're going to be like, fuck this. Like I don't need to do this anymore. I'll go like act, or I'll go
do something else.
Yeah. Because it is a solitary lifestyle. And like when I first started comedy, I was not good at being alone. I was very codependent on people in my life.
Right.
But then I really made me an independent person. Like I used to never eat at restaurants alone. I have no problem. I used to never go to movies alone. And now it's my favorite thing.
Oh.
It's just, yeah. And I mean, like, I feel like I've kind of gone into a bubble in this past few years where I just like, I don't talk to a lot of people anymore, but then I'm trying to get out more and be more social. And like,
yeah,
I now have like a house where I can like have it as a social center. You know what
nice.
I mean?
Nice. Are you throwing like dinner parties?
Oh, we're going to.
Are you going to?
You'll be invited. Don't you worry.
Oh, yay.
We have a milkshake machine. We're going to have a milkshake party.
When did you get that?
His mom. I think he bought it for his mom years ago. And she's like, I never use this. You guys can have it. And it's like one of those like 50s diners milkshake machines.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that people's, even now, like this podcast is called Kathleen McGee is a Hot Mess. I'm not a hot mess anymore.
Yeah.
But I still am a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you're still doing it.
Financially, I'm a hot mess.
Yeah. No, so it's crazy because, like, for me, it's, I don't know, like, my relationship, like, my love life is, like, fantastic.
Yeah.
Career finances, it's like, oh
yeah, me too.
It's the reverse, whereas before my career was great, my like
love life and love personal life,
yeah.
And I feel, and I've even had somebody who has been a fan of mine message me on Twitter, and he's like, because I'm so happy because I have a puppy now, and
yeah,
he makes me happy, and like my boyfriend makes me happy, and I'm happier than I've been in years and years and years.
Yeah.
And this guy messaged me and he goes, this isn't like an insult, but don't lose your edge.
Oh,
because like I find my best comedy comes from when I'm miserable. So when I'm happy, I don't write as much. Like, what is there to joke about? But then I just like get stoned. And last night I got really high and I started thinking about how much I love rice. And then I'm like, I could do 5 minutes on rice, I think.
Yeah.
Which is like, now that's cool because maybe my act is going to
change
and I'm not just going to be all about being wasted and fucking anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's like for me, like in terms of writing sketch, it is to like process emotions. And like after breakup, I'm always like, I'm going to write like crazy. Yeah. And I have all the, you know, and then more recently being in like a great relationship, it's just like, oh, I want to write like love poem type stuff. And like, and then like do something like, yeah, I don't know, comedic that way. And then you do find your way. You do find your way. Cause
I think it's good though, because that's why I like comedy, because it's people have asked me like, how do you write your stuff? I'm like, it just depends on where I am in my life.
Totally.
Like last year I had a very angry 45 minute of like how shitty life was, and like as I was very depressed and very down about men, and so I had a very angry 45 minutes. And now that I'm like not angry anymore.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting back into being silly. But that's just like, if I went back and looked at all my material, I would be like, oh, that's when I broke up with this guy. And that's when I started dating this guy. And that's when I moved to LA and I was excited. And that's when I, you know, like I can track what where the jokes are coming from. And I think that most like comedians that I respect and love are real about themselves. It's not an act. It's like their real feelings.
Well, they change. Like, I mean, I don't know tons about like comedians or comedy, but like Louis C.K. was more absurdist before, and now what he does is so different.
He was doing impersonations on that special we watched last night.
Oh my god!
Yes,
that's
weird. They were funny, but it's like, it is cool to watch that. It is cool to watch somebody from the beginning of their career and slowly see where they go. Like it's a really cool thing to see. And I think that the best comics will change a lot.
Yeah,
not like. Too much, but they will change with the way that their life is going. Like, you can see it.
Yeah. I mean, if it were the same the whole time, like over the span of like decades, it'd be kind of weird.
That's also why I think that like, and if there are comics listening to this that are new comics, slow the fuck down. Like, I'd say this all the time. Mm. I'm at 12 years and I still am being told by comics that are 20 years in to be like, shut up. You're like 12 years in. Shut up. You're fine. But it's like when comics are like, I've been into 2 years. Why am I not doing this? Why am I not doing that? And you have to like look back on it. Are you funnier than a lot of the people in the scene? Are you working as hard? Or it's not, and you're not going to be this big famous celebrity comic probably ever. I don't even know how many comics there are working today in this world, but there's not that many successful ones. If you look at the grand scheme of things,
right,
it's super rare.
Right.
Right. So if you're in comedy for fame and money, it's dumb. It's a waste of your time.
It's all of the arts though. It's like for me, a lot of times I have to be like, think of being in process. So just learning and getting better. And like once I start being more product oriented where I'm like, I need to book this. I need to get this. I need to like, then it's just like, I don't know. It goes downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally. Yeah. It's a process finding your voice. Did they talk about that? I don't know if that's an acting thing. I don't know what the comparison would be, but finding your voice means just like finally figuring out who you really are on stage. And so most people will say you will find your voice between 8 and 10 years in comedy if you're doing comedy on a regular basis. So I think around 10 years was when I started to feel most comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
And I stopped writing set lists and I just kind of, I go up and I'm like, oh, I think I know what I'm going to say, but I don't totally know.
Yeah.
So, but it takes forever to find that. And if anybody says, oh, I found my voice in a year, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's it. You know, that's the thing that scares me in terms of like, if I have to start over in anything right now, it's like, man, I have to give it at least 10 years.
Yeah.
Before I can say like, I'm okay.
I wish more people had that attitude.
But then it's like, I don't start anything because I'm like, oh, 10 years.
I can't do 10 years cross stitching.
Yeah.
I mean, I do want to become a really great cross stitcher, but.
Yeah, but.
I don't have 10 years to devote to that kind of crap.
I feel that way about, I mean, if I ever want to stand up, but I don't know. I got to, I know for sure at least 10 years. Same with like, I'm like considering writing. It's like, I got to put in at least 10 years to be like, okay.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's really a good thing to hear. That's realistic. That's more realistic than most people's point of view about anything. And I think a lot of people still think that you're sitting at a soda shop and an agent sees you.
Oh,
you know, I think that people still have that weird mentality and they don't realize, like you said, you did the interview and then you were broke. Like nobody thinks, oh, she just did a big movie. She's probably got like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you're just like, nope.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not how it works.
No, it's like I didn't get paid a lot.
Yeah.
And then lots of money goes out, like your publicist, to the agents, to like, and like even just trying to go to LA to audition. It's like all the money goes out the door. Like it's the poorest I've been, because at least before I had like a full-time office job. Yeah. And then after like the interview, like I kept my job for a bit, but then I was like, okay, it's time to like really make a go at it.
Yeah, it's hard to be like, your movie is out and you're getting coffee for people. You know what I mean? Like the office job thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's like even now, I work at a fish shop as a part-time job.
The one on Maine?
No. It's on Granville Island.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, and I only work one day a week, but it's still like, people are still like, what are you doing? It's like I need to work.
Yeah.
And like I'm kind of I might start up a part-time job with a friend and an office job, and it's just like they're like, and other again other really people are like, this? Really?
Yeah.
You're doing that? I'm like, yeah,
'cause yeah.
I need to pay for rent and eat.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people like still have this like weird cloudy view of the arts, and like once you are successful, you're successful for life, right? Like you're just sitting on a pile of money now.
Yeah.
But it is like, it's true. There are so many little places that will take that money away from you, and like then you're sitting there with this tiny little pile when you were once sitting on this giant pile, and you're
like,
what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. The richest people in the entertainment industry are not even artists.
They're
the people with money.
Yeah.
That produce, or, you know, like they're, or executives and stuff like that. It's not the artists until you get to a certain level, and then you're.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's only like 0.0001%.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's luck. It really is so much about luck.
No,
and being
totally
in the
is.
Right place at the right time. It's the same way with comedy. It's
It's luck. And so you got to just you just got to do it because you like to.
Yeah. You can't get into this mindset of like, well, I'm really good. Why isn't anyone recognizing how good I am? Because there's a lot of really good people out there that are doing the same thing as you.
Yeah. Or probably better than you too.
Yeah. It's a fun little thing that we've chosen to do with our lives. Are your parents supportive of you?
Initially, my mom was like, when are you going back to school? So she's sort of, cause I started doing sketch comedy when I was in university and she just thought it was like a hobby.
Yeah.
And then, fun. Yeah. And it wasn't until I brought her on set to the interview where she was just kind of like, oh, this is a real thing. Yes. Okay. And then once the movie actually came out and all that stuff happened, she was like, oh. And then same thing with my sister. It's not until
she got
the show, which like we're so lucky. Like no one, like actors vie for like series regulars and like being the lead in a feature film. Like in a sense we've made it. Mm-hmm. And my mom was sort of like, until she saw that, it was like a hobby.
Which makes sense. I mean, I had that same moment with my mom because I had like moved to Toronto and I was broke and she almost every week it was like, are you really going to stay there? Are you like, she, and it wasn't that I wasn't doing well. I wasn't really like doing much. And then I remember I entered that Russell Peters contest and I won it. And that's when she was like, oh, this is a real thing.
Yeah.
And not that she wasn't supportive before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that she still sees like, because she still lends me money all the time. Doesn't ever ask me to pay it back right away. And I'm sure I owe my mom tens of thousands of dollars in distress pay as well. But
interest.
But it's really important to have a supportive family, I think, if you're going to get into the arts. Because I know comics that don't have supportive parents. And like, sometimes you have no rent. And so who do you go to, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah. So that's good to hear that. She finally.
Yeah. And
I think all parents are just worried for their kids.
No, and it makes sense. Like my mom's an immigrant, right? Like she came here, to have like a better life or for us to have a better life. Yeah. And it's like she sees us like starving and like, you know, being sad or whatever. It's just like, no, she wanted more for us. And I get that. We're able to also now pursue whatever it is that we want. Yeah. So that's cool.
Exciting.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I think that's a really cool thing when you go after what you really wanted, even though it's a really hard thing to go after.
Yeah.
And then you succeed in some way. I think that's really, that's cool.
It's, but you know what's weird? People are always like, I don't know if it's the same for you pursuing stand-up, but people are like, oh, that's so brave. And that's, you know, that you pursued that. And, you know, despite your parents or despite, you know, the industry, etc. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know what else.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Like the whole bravery thing. Like Amy Schumer's new special, she talks about how the worst thing you want to hear when you have a picture of yourself naked is that you were brave. Because it's like, okay, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, I think I got a nice body, but brave, what? But it's the same thing as like pursuing your dream is a brave thing. I don't think it's a brave thing. I think it's a stupid thing.
In a way, right?
I think that I'm really stupid for doing what I'm doing and just hoping that it pays off one day.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not, I don't personally feel brave for doing comedy.
It's because it's just what you want to do.
It's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to do arts ever since I was a little kid. Like, of course, when you're a little girl, I want to be a movie star. And I always wanted to, I used to tell my mom I wanted to be a lounge singer.
What?
I wanted to be like a lounge singer.
I don't know
where I got that from. But yeah, no. And then but now to know that I, like when I was a kid and I'm like, oh, I want to be in movies or something. And to know that I've gone in that direction where I'm doing what I wanted to be when I was a little kid, it feels good.
Yeah, that's true.
But it doesn't feel brave. Do you know what I mean? That word is just so silly.
Yeah, because it's like.
Brave is like running into a house that's on fire and saving kittens and stuff. Like, brave is not getting on stage and then getting drunk afterwards. It's just not. It's stupid more than anything else. And you're just praying to God or whatever you pray to that something will pay off in the end.
Yeah, we're just, we're like eternal optimists.
Yeah, I think you have to be. Even though artists are some of the most depressed, negative yeah. people, you still have to be somewhat optimistic that things are going to work out for you.
Yeah.
So it's very good. Things are going to work out for both of us.
For both of us.
I'm
yeah.
so excited.
I want to go to your house for this milkshake party.
Yeah, we will. I'm going to have a milkshake party. I'm going to have a birthday party soon because my birthday's coming up. So I'm probably going to have one on a Sunday during the day because like comics can come. And then I think that Adam will be able to be there with his chef people. Anyway, but it'll be really fun. And then you can meet my dog. And I love my dog.
Yeah, I want to meet your dog.
Are you allergic or anything?
No.
Okay, good.
You know, honestly, I think I would get a cat. I'm more of a cat person, but I will love your dog.
I always was saying that. I was like, I'm really more of a cat person. They're easier to deal with.
Yeah.
And then this guy just landed into my life. Like, I did not pursue this dog
at all.
This dog pursued me. No, I'm kidding. I did see him and I tried to get him at first and then he was adopted out, but then he came back. So, but it all just fell into place. Like I've wanted a dog forever, but it just was like, boom, this happened, this, and it was all perfect. I call him my soulmate as a dog. Like he's my dog soulmate. We were meant to be together. I'm gross, but I feel that way about him. And I thought he was going to be a lot of work and he's not, he's like a really good dog. He's really quiet and calm. He's a bit of a dick sometimes. He did piss all over our guest bed when my friend was staying here.
Oh no.
Yeah, she comes and she's like, I think Eugene peed all over the bed. I'm like, no, he's holy fuck.
Oh,
he did.
Yes.
But yeah, you say that now and it's the same as people saying I don't want kids. I'm like, you say that now, but I don't know, it just, he's changed my life. It's like, it's,
that's so great.
Yeah,
that's
if
great.
It comes, if an opportunity comes up and it feels right, get a dog.
And like the timing and everything,
it
was
just
like perfect,
all worked
for you
out.
Yeah,
it just all, like, I was moving into, like, my boyfriend was just moving in, so we have this whole house now, and like it was just perfect timing. It all just worked out perfectly, and it was meant to be. It was totally meant to be. And he's small, so I can take him with me.
Is that
road.
Easy?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's like $50 more per flight, and like you know, some rental car companies will not allow you to put dogs in them. But like if he's in his crate, he can. Like there's all these little things that you have to do, and things change. But stuff changes when you have a kid. So,
you know, I think if I were like a stand up starting out. Yeah, it'd be smart to get a dog to take on the road.
Yeah.
Then you're like less lonely.
He came with me on the road last weekend and it really was great that he was with me because I was driving for 8 hours by myself.
Yeah.
And so I had him. We got out and took a walk and he staying, just coming back. Oh my God, coming back after a show. This is the first time it happened on the road.
Yeah.
And just to have him in that room with me.
Aww.
It was so nice.
Aww.
It was so nice. So it's really... And I find a lot of female comics have small dogs.
Okay. They,
like a lot of female.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Like Nikki Payne has Emilio Estevez. Liza has Blanche. Nikki Payne. Nikki Glazer has another dog. I can't remember his name right now. But like it seems to be Bridget Everett has a little dog. It seems to be that like a lot of women comics get dogs. But I think it's because on the road, we don't stay out and party as much as the guys.
Yeah.
As much. Sometimes we do. But I think a lot of us just want to go back to our rooms. And so to have somebody in our room that we don't have to have sex with.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. Oh, life. Anyway. If people want to follow you on social media or anything, do you have like a
Instagram
and stuff?
Instagram is at Diana Bangarama. And Twitter is... at the Diana Bang, and Facebook, I have a page. I don't update the page as much.
Yeah.
I don't update any of those things.
But you're on
much.
There.
I'm on there, so you can seek me out.
And if you're doing like live performances, you'll promote them on there.
Yeah.
Do you have anything coming up?
I'm going to do Paul Anthony's Talent Time.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
And what's the date of that one?
4th or 5th.
Of April?
Of April.
Okay.
And I'm doing The Flame, which is a storytelling
thing. Oh, is it kind of like the moth idea?
I don't know. Yeah. I think. Yeah. I have to write a story. I was like starting it up today. And so I got to write something.
Cool.
And look out for the lady show.
Lady show is great.
Yeah, I don't know when the next one is, but it'll be sometime in the next like month or two.
Yeah, if you're in Vancouver, check out the lady show because I had a blast and it was such a fun show. It was so much fun.
Yeah, no, I honestly I'm so thankful like that I somehow got to like do the show, and then they asked me to sort of be like
a regular
member, and I was just like, that, yeah, I was just like, this, it's like when I talk about comedy saved me, like that, like it's like point, like times like that where I'm like, oh my god, I needed this.
Yeah. Comedy saves a lot of people. It really does.
Comedy and art. Yeah.
It really does. It saves the vulnerable people in this world. It saves the people. It saves more people than religion. I think.
Join us.
It was so great talking to you. I had such a good time. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yay.
Well, I got to.